Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Hey, good morning to you.
Morning.
My name is Rob. I'm one of the pastors at Next Level Church. Very honored for you to be here today. If this is your first time with us, I want to invite you to participate in what you're about to hear. And you can do that by downloading a free app called YouVersion. And this is a great app that you can use to learn more about the Bible, to read the Bible. I use this app every day. But there's a portion of it called the Live page that allows you to interact with what you're about to hear. All the scriptures I'm going to cover are in there. There's a question of the week. You can give prayer requests to our prayer team. You can give online. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there. So if you're new, take a chance. You're not going to lose anything because it's free. So go ahead and open that. If you're a regular, if you're an owner at Next Level Church, I invite you to open your tablet or your smartphone at this time and open up YouVersion. Before we dive into our talk today, I wanted to take care of some family business. And so family business means that if you're here and this is your first time, or if maybe you've been coming for a few weeks and you're not sure if this is your church, this is your moment to check out. You can get on Facebook at this point and no one will judge you. But if this is your church, if this is where God planted you, I wanted to update you on a transition, on something that is happening, just so that we're all on the same page and know everything that's going on. In January of this year, we hired our very first student pastor, and his name's Jacob Ray. And Jacob came in and helped us start our very first student ministry. And we are forever indebted and honored for the work that Jacob did to help us kick off the student ministry. Yeah. Not only did he help us kick off our student ministry, but he also helped take our band to another level because he can play literally every instrument known to man. There are literally people who come to Next Level Church and say that the reason they don't miss church is because they want to see what instrument Jacob is going to play on the stage on a Sunday. And if you don't know who he is, he was the one playing the banjo today, and there's his beautiful picture right up there on the screens. Well, Jacob is transitioning to go back to school, and he was trying to juggle full-time employment and get his degree and just decided that was too much. And so he's going to go back to school. He'll be heading off in the fall to Liberty University to get his degree. And this is sad for us, but we're excited for him. And one of the really cool things, though, about this is that this isn't the end of our relationship. We still hope to see Jacob. In fact, we hope to have him back and help us in the music department, especially even while he's away at school. You'll be seeing him hopefully from time to time. We're incredibly honored, though, for what he did in that handful of months that he was here. And if you see him today, would you just help honor him? He loves to be tickled, and so if you would just give him a little tickle, he would really feel honored by that. And but we are very thankful for Jacob and for his time here, and I'm thankful to be able to continue our relationship even though he's going away to school. I did want to update, though, you as our church, because what's going to happen with our student ministry? Well, the same thing that's been going on the last couple months is going to continue going on. A couple months ago, we made a change to move student ministry underneath the leadership of Amber Amezcua, who was over just our kids, and now she's going to transition to a director of family ministry. And we saw this done by multiple churches and also by the curriculum that we get. Our tots and our kids and our students all are the same curriculum, and they really push for and lead for a family ministry. And so Amber is going to become in charge of the family ministry, and we've already been doing this. The last 2-3 months, it's been run this way, and it's been doing incredibly well, and we're really excited about that change. And so I wanted to update all you parents. Student ministry is still going on. It's going to go even continue going stronger, but also this is Jacob's last day today. So if you see him, make sure you give him a tickle because he loves that. All right, well, today, now we're done with the family business. So if you're on Facebook, get off now, okay? Today we kick off a brand new series entitled Core. And in this series, we're going to highlight some of our core values. Now, this is a great series if you're new to Next Level Church. And it's a great series because it's going to help you decide if this is the church for you. You could come a lot of other Sundays and a lot of other weeks, and hopefully you'll like what you see, but this is a crucial next few weeks for you to come to say, hey, do I really buy into this? Do I really buy into what God is challenging them to do, leading them to do? Is this the place that I can give back to and serve? And so if you're new, this is a great series for you. If you're an owner, that is, Next Level is your church, I think this is a great series for you as well, because it is a reminder of what God is calling us and has called us to do. So for the next few weeks, we're going to look at some of our core values. Now, we have six of them, and you probably ignore them and walk past them every single Sunday. On the wall, the wooden wall, right when you walk in, they are all labeled out there. They're also on our website, and we try to almost every week highlight one of our core values from the stage. It was mentioned in our top three. And so I want to test you to see if you can come up with our core values. And here's how this is going to work. If you know one of our core values, raise your hand and I'll call on you, and we're going to see if together, all of us, there's probably 100 some people in here, if together all of us can come up with our six core values. So you don't have to do all the work, you just have to come up with one, and five other people have to come up with the other ones. And there's a prize, okay? So if you get it right, there's a prize. And I want to help you out. Our core values are not our mission statement. Our mission statement is love Jesus, love people, make a difference. Our core values come underneath that. So if you think you know one of our core values, raise your hand, I'll call on you. And right there in the front row, that's my wife. Please get this right. Disciples, disciples. Disciples, disciples. The prize, I know you can't eat this right now, but you can give it away to a friend. You want a Reese's cup or a Kit Kat? Kit Kat, there you go. All right, we're one down. We got five more to go. I see that hand right there. Can't do life alone. That's beautiful. I'm going to try. This is going to miss. So everyone look up and pass this back to her, okay? Oh, ceiling. Still tastes good. Still tastes good. There you go. Good assist. All right. We got four more. Way in the back. Yes, seek God and the rest will follow. What do you want, a Kit Kat or a Reese cup?
Reese.
All right, I'm just going to, can you guys just pass this all the way back? Just pass it all the way. Oh, she's all the way in the back. So just everybody touch it, get your germs on it. Everybody just touch it. Don't lick it, just touch it. All right. All right, yes.
Become owners, not spectators.
That's awesome. What do you want? Peanut butter cup, there we go. Oh. Just a bit short. All right. We got a couple. Yes. Close. No, it's close. Authenticity matters. There you go. You got it. What do you want? A Reese's cup or Kit Kat? Kit Kat. There we go. Man, these lights are blinding. Good luck. Oh, woo! Nailed it. All right. We have, I think, one more. Yes. Yes, it is God's kingdom, not ours. That is one. You want a Reese's cup or a Kit Kat?
Okay.
All right, I'll give you a Kit Kat then. There we go. Awesome. So we have six core values. Seek God and the rest will follow. Authenticity matters. You can't do life alone. It's God's kingdom, not ours. Become owners, not spectators, and disciples, disciples. And I have one more prize that I want to give away. Is there anyone here today who this is your very first time at Next Level, that you've never been before, that this is your very first, okay, awesome. Here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna come up on the stage and you're gonna sing for us. And I'm joking. I would never do that to you. But I am gonna give you the good stuff, all right? You get this, this is the expensive chocolate. You don't get the cheap stuff. And so, I don't wanna hit moving target. Awesome, good catch, all right. All right, well, today we're going to go over one of our core values, and it is potentially our most important core value, and it is important because out of this, everything else that we do flows. And this core value came out of a problem. Often in life, when you have a problem, when there's something that is a frustration, something good comes out of it, and that is the solution, that you figure out, I want to do something different because of a perceived problem or because of a problem in your life. And a handful of years ago, about 2011, I was wrapping up my time investing in a group of high school guys. These guys came to my house every single Wednesday from 7 to 8:30. And it was a group of guys that started with me. Some of them were in eighth grade, most of them were in ninth grade, and I had them for their whole high school career. They're now going into their senior year of high school. And I'm looking at this group of guys, and this is a group of guys that I felt really close with. In fact, I'm still close with a lot of them today. We will still text, we'll still go to lunch, we still hang out. Like, we have our own handshake that we do whenever we see each other in public, and like, we're good. We like each other. But this group of guys, in their senior year, I started analyzing what was going on with this group of guys. And this group of guys brought in their own sets of problems when they were freshmen in high school. And instead of seeing some of those problems dissolve, the same stuff they struggled with as freshmen in high school, they were still struggling with as seniors in high school. And I had a group of guys who would say, yes, I'm a Christian. I've signed up on the dotted line. I'm Team Jesus. I'm coming to a Bible study at a youth pastor's house every Wednesday. That would shock some of you if your teenager requested to do that. And here's the thing. It was all guys. There were no girls there. It's not like they were coming to like impress someone or to hang out with the opposite sex. It was a group of dudes, high school guys. But I wasn't seeing a lot of life change. In fact, I wasn't seeing any spiritual thermometer movement. I wasn't seeing any movement of God. I wasn't seeing any life change. And this whole group of guys, on a low night, we would have about 14. On a high night, we'd have about 21, 22 students. And out of this whole group of guys who came every single week to my house and allowed me to pour into them, I didn't see a lot of life change. And so as they were getting ready to graduate, I started wrestling with things. And I started saying that I've got to do something different. Because I didn't just do this just to hang out with high schoolers. Even though I like high schoolers, there's a lot of other things I could do besides hang out with high school boys. My house smelled the worst it ever smelled after they would leave every Wednesday. It was awful. I could have done a lot of other things, but I decided to hang out with them, and I wanted to invest in them, and I wanted to see God move in their life, and I wasn't seeing it. And so that was the problem. Around the same time, I was feeling compelled to start a church. And so I started saying, okay, if I'm going to start a church, I've got to do something different. Because under my leadership, I hadn't seen this group move very far spiritually. And so when I start a church, it has to be different. There has to be something different about this church. Because starting a church was not like a home run. Starting a church was not like an easy thing or something that was just like a no-brainer. In fact, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but we have a lot of churches in our area. There are churches across the street from churches. And when we first started our church, we met in a building called Mosaic in Newport News. There were 9 churches meeting in one building. This area, the peninsula, 757, it didn't need another church. There's lots of churches. But as I looked around at the spiritual climate of our area, I noticed the same thing that was going on with my group of students. That there are a lot of churches, and there are a lot of people who commit to go to church every week. And there's a lot of people who would say, yes, I'm a Christian, but there's not a lot of activity of Jesus. There's not a lot of God moving. There's not a lot of people coming to this area and saying, there is something different about this area. The Spirit of God is just here. Like, God is moving and lives are being changed. People that are broken are becoming whole. This is an area where you come and you just sense the presence of God. You would think that this area would be that because there's so many churches. But yet, I just don't see it. So when I felt compelled to start a church, I said that we've got to have something that makes sure that we are different. That we do something that doesn't just allow us to exist, it doesn't just allow us to meet, but that we do something. I wanted to start a church that was open and excited about reaching those that didn't go to the church. At the same time, it was making those that did go to church feel uncomfortable. I wanted to start a church that pushed everyone to fall more in love with Jesus. And so our core value, that one of our very first ones that we came up with, was simply this: seek God and the rest will follow. Seek God and the rest will follow. Seek God, and we really do believe the rest will follow. Seek God and everything else after that comes into place. Seek God. And so what happens when you seek God? Well, you get things like the Bible talks about, that when you seek God, when you put Jesus into your life, you get things like a peace that surpasses all understanding. You get his power that guards your heart from evil thoughts and worry and anxiety. When you have Jesus, you get a love and a peace and a patience and a kindness and a goodness and a gentleness and a self-control. You get some amazing things when you become a Christian. And yet, Christians so often don't seek after Jesus. Now, if you're new to the church, or if you're not really into this Jesus thing, this isn't about you. This is about us. Because what I notice is that there are lots of Christians who said, yeah, I signed up for this. Yes, I'm Team Jesus. But yet we're not experiencing the benefits of Jesus. And we're not experiencing the benefits of Jesus because we're not seeking after Jesus. You seek God and you watch as the rest will follow. And today I want to tackle a verse that talks about this very thing. In fact, it answers why. Why is it that someone would become a Christian and yet still want to resist God? Right? You would think that wouldn't make sense. If we're going to become a Christian, wouldn't we just dive in and go full into our relationship with God? But there is something inside of us, even those of us that are Christians, that kind of resists God and pushes away and says, I think I've had enough. And we're going to look at a text today that talks about this very reason, about why you, even as a Christian, why you don't want to seek God more. A little context about our verse. Our verse is written by a guy by the name of Paul, and we say that Paul is a PTP-er. That's a primetime player. He wrote over half of what we call the New Testament. He was a missionary that went around the world, and he wrote letters to various churches. And one of the churches he wrote to was the church in Rome. The church in Rome had some issues, and Paul addressed it, but his letter to the church in Rome is considered to be his masterpiece. It is like he's written a lot of letters, but this is the letter that he is mostly known for. It's a little bit tough to read. It's not a letter for beginners, but it is full of theology. It is full of amazing things and insights about God. And we're going to look at a section of his letter to the church in Rome. Now, the verses that we're about to read, I call these verses the doo-doo verses. Thank you for laughing. You share my seventh grade sense of humor. I appreciate that. The rest of you that didn't laugh, what you need to know is that my sense of humor stopped maturing at about seventh grade. And so if you're on a higher plane and you don't think things like doo-doo are funny, we can disagree and still be friends. Just want to let you know that. This is, though, these are the doo-doo verses. And I want to show you why these are the doo-doo verses. In fact, in order for you to really see this, every time I say the word do, D-O, I want you to count it out loud. And we're going to keep track of how many times Paul says or writes the word do. All right, you guys good with that? Can you help me out with this? Okay, so Romans 7, 14 through 20, it's going to come up on the screens, or you can follow along in YouVersion. Paul writes, "We know that the law is spiritual, but I am unspiritual, sold as a slave to sin. I do," you got to do better than that, "I do," one, "not understand what I do. For what I want to do,
three,
I do,
four,
not do,
five,
but what I hate, I do.
Six,
and if I do,
seven,
what I do,
eight,
not want to do,
nine,
I agree that the law is good. As it is no longer I myself who do it,
ten,
but it is sin living in me. For I know that the good itself does," we'll count that,
11,
"not dwell in me. That is in my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For I do
13,
not do
14,
the good I want to do,
15,
but the evil I do
16,
not want to do,
17,
this I keep on doing.
18,
now if I do
19,
what I do
20,
not want to do,
21,
it is no longer I who do it, but it is sin living in me that does it."
23.
All right, now do you get why I call these the doo-doo verses? Like, do is over and over and over again. And I am betting that because you were counting, you don't have a fat clue what Paul just wrote. Like, you just were counting, there's 22 do's, so I have no idea what he said. So I want to explain to you what Paul is saying. Paul is saying that if you're a Christian, even if you're a Christian today, that there is something inside of you that fights against the very spirit of God. That there's something inside of you that causes you to do what you don't want to do. There's something inside of you that says, today is going to be different. Today I'm going to make a good choice. Today I'm going to stop doing that. Today I'm going to live for God. Today I'm not going to lose my temper. Today is going to be different. My relationship's going to be, today I'm going to do it. There's something inside of you that says, today I'm going to do it, but then it resists against that. And you end up going in the opposite direction and you do what you hate. So you end up saying, today I try to do this, but I'm now over here and I hate it. I can't stand that I'm here again, but I'm here again. And Paul talks about that there's this tension, even living inside of him, a guy that wrote the New Testament, there's this pull to do what we don't want to do. I think all of us can relate to that. I think every single one of us, that there is something in your life that you're doing on a regular basis that deep down inside you just say, I hate it. I like it in the moment. I enjoy it. It brings some pleasure to my life, but I just wish I could quit it. I wish I could stop doing that. I wish I don't know why. Why do I do that? Let me just make this practical for you. For me, I hate being fat, but I love eating food more than I hate being fat. Can anyone relate to the struggle? And it's like, I will wake up, literally, for weeks. My wife and I have just started, we're on ending 2 weeks of a brand new diet plan. And before this, it like literally every day I would wake up and I would say, today is the day that I'm going to do what I want to do. Today's the day that I'm going to eat clean. Today's the day I'm going to resist those things that I know are bad for me. Today's the day that I'm going to exercise and watch what I eat. I have a hard time balancing those two things. In my mind, I always think if I exercise, then I can eat whatever I want. It doesn't work out very well for me. So I say, today is the day I'm going to do this. But then I'm driving down the road and I see this. And it's like a tractor beam that just sucks me in. And I'm driving down the road and I'm like, oh, that would be so good. And I exercised today and I've been pretty disciplined. I deserve that. And I know, though, when I walk in there, I know that in order to work off one Krispy Kreme donut, you have to do 30 minutes of hard cardio. 30 minutes. And so I think to myself, you know what? I'm pretty sure that I can run for 4 or 5 hours. I think that I can. Who eats one donut? Come on, guys. It's like, I know inside, like, I can do it. If I can just will myself, I can work off the donut. And so you do something that you do not want to do. And then I get home and I tell myself, okay, here's the thing. I know I wasn't supposed to do that. I know today was the day that I was going to resist that. I did it anyway, so let me try to make up for it. But then I think to myself, you know what? I heard somewhere that you can burn off calories just by sitting. And Netflix is, it's technically running on the internet. And so I can sit and allow Netflix to run, and maybe I'll burn off a donut. And then what happens? I wake up the next day, and I've done what I didn't want to do, and I hate that I did it. And there's something inside of us that is the same thing. There's this pull. There's this pull that goes against what you want to do. There's a pull that goes against what is even best for you. There's something in all of our lives that says, I know this isn't good for me, but I'm going to do it anyway. Paul says the struggle is real. But he goes on to explain, and he goes on to talk to Christians. Look at what he says. He says, those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on what the flesh desires. But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. The mind governed by the flesh is dead, but the mind governed by the Spirit is life and peace. The mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's laws, nor can it do so. Those who are in the realm of the flesh cannot please God. So what is Paul saying? Well, Paul's saying that every single one of us, if you've ever been born, which all of you have a flesh. Paul calls it the flesh. This struggle that's inside of you, Paul says that's your flesh. And this flesh is a powerful force inside of you. And this flesh doesn't want things that are good for you. It feels like it's good for you, and it convinces you and tells you that you can handle it, and that it's not that bad, and you just need a taste, you just need a look, you just need a little bit, and you can handle it, and the consequences aren't going to be that bad, and no one's going to notice, and your flesh lies to you, and your flesh never has your best interest in mind. And Paul says that flesh that's inside of you, it's not just kind of bad, it is contrary to God. In fact, it fights against God. So your flesh, your natural, you wake up every single day in a battle. And the battle is not other people. The battle is you, your flesh. In fact, we always blame other people for the problems in our life. But so often, we are the problem. Almost every time I talk to someone and they have a problem, they start pointing fingers. And, well, my parents didn't do this for me. Or my spouse isn't meeting my needs. Or he did this to me. Or if they would just change, then my life would be better. The truth of the matter is, the vast majority of our problems are self-inflicted problems. That we bring a lot of our problems on ourselves, and we do it because we have a flesh. And even though the flesh is inside of us, it doesn't want what's best for us. It's selfish, and it wants to destroy what God is trying to do in your life. There is a flesh inside of you that you have to fight against. You have to fight against it. And so Paul then is addressing Christians, and he tells us what we can do. And he's saying, hey, listen today, there is a flesh, and I love that he can relate to us. Here's a guy who wrote over half of the New Testament, and he doesn't say Christianity is easy. He doesn't say, I don't struggle anymore. He says the struggle is real, but he challenges Christians to do something. And this next verse is written to Christians. So if you're here today and you would say, yes, I'm a Christian. I'm not anti-God. I've signed up on the dotted line. I am a Christian. This is for you. Look at what Paul says. He says, you, however, are not in the realm of the flesh, but in the realm of the Spirit, if indeed the Spirit of God lives in you. And if anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, they do not belong to Christ. But if Christ is in you, then even though your body is subject to death because of sin, the Spirit gives life because of righteousness. And if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies because of his Spirit who lives in you. So what is Paul saying? Well, Paul's saying that if you're a Christian today, you're not on your own. And yeah, you have a flesh that wants to destroy you, and you have a flesh that craves things, that causes you to end up over here and say, I hate this. Even though I like it, I hate it. I hate that I'm over here again. This flesh is strong. But Paul says, if you're a Christian, then you're not in the flesh realm anymore. You have the Spirit of God living inside of you. And the Spirit of God has given you everything you need to fight against this flesh. But you have to do something. The Spirit of God is living inside of you. But you can't expect God to do everything for you. And Paul asks this question in the middle of this challenge to Christians. He raises this question. It's something that we need to think about. And the question that Paul says is the Spirit of God living in me? Is the Spirit of God living in me? Is God's Spirit really living inside of me? Because if God's Spirit is really living inside of me, then I have everything I need to resist the flesh and to battle against it. But if God's Spirit's not living in me, then it's up to me to do something about it. And how do you get God's Spirit to live in you? Well, it's not about just praying some magical prayer. It's not about going to church once or twice. It is about aligning your life with Jesus, saying, hey, I submit to you. I am Team Jesus. I'm going to obey you. I'm going to follow you. And when I fall away and I mess up and I screw up, I'm going to come back to you. I am on your side. I'm following after Jesus. When you put your faith in Jesus, His Spirit comes to live inside of you. And His Spirit is the thing that gives us everything we need to resist temptation and to kill our flesh. But Paul says that you've got to feed the Spirit. So it's kind of like this. You have inside of you this flesh that is waging war against yourself. Like it is wanting to destroy you. It's not like mildly like kind of coming at you, you know, like, hey, you know, I don't know if you want to ruin your life today or not, but why don't we ruin your life? Like, it's not like kind of calm. It is attacking you. It is like being in a cage with Ronda Rousey. You know what I'm talking about? Does that relate to anyone? If you don't know who she is, Google her. She won a fight last night in 34 seconds. She is a bad human being. Like, if I were to face Ronda Rousey, I would not just come up with it casually and just say, hey, you know, today I'm going to fight Ronda Rousey, and it's no big deal, and I hope I win. You know, I've been doing CrossFit. I think I might take her. And like, no, if I'm going to fight against someone like Ronda Rousey, I'm bringing a tank. Like, I'm not going to allow her to, like, break my limbs. I'm going to come prepared. And Paul is saying, listen, you are in a battle with your flesh that hates God. There is something inside of you, even though you're a Christian, there's something inside of you that says, I don't really think he's true. I don't really think he's real. I don't really know if I need to pray. I don't really know if I believe in his Bible. I don't really know if I need all this Christian stuff. I'm just going to kind of just go lazily about life and hope nothing bad happens to me. There's something inside of you that pushes against the very Spirit of God, and you've got to go to battle. We want Jesus to do everything for us, and he did everything for us when it comes to salvation. He died on a cross. He shed his blood. But you have to feed the Spirit of God if you want to fight your flesh. So often we walk into situations and we just say, it would be like this. It would be like me walking into Krispy Kreme and saying, okay, God, get me out of this. God, would you cause me not to see these donuts that are being baptized in amazing glaze in front of my eyes? And God, I see that lady on the other side of the counter. She's giving samples. Would you cause her not to give me a sample? Because I don't want to fall into temptation. And God, this stuff really tastes good. So could you make this stuff taste like lima beans? Because I hate lima beans. And I would never eat Krispy Kreme again if it tasted like lima beans. And we want God to do everything for us. But if you feed your flesh, you're going to get more flesh. If you feed the Spirit, you're going to get more Spirit. What you pour into your relationship with Jesus is what you'll get out of it. And that's the main point of what Paul is saying. It's the main point of today. If you want to take a note or write that down, you can do that. What you pour into your relationship with Jesus is what you'll get out of it. What you pour into your relationship with Jesus is what you'll get out of it. Now, why is this so important for us as a church? It's so important for us as a church because we could create an environment that people just like to come to. We could create an environment that people are willing to give up an hour and a half on Sundays, and they enjoy it. In fact, that's what we try to do. We try to work really hard so that every Sunday is enjoyable and so that you like it. We could figure out ways to create services that would rock your world, little country girl. And you'd post stuff on Facebook and Twitter and say, oh, I love this church. And we could convince you to love an hour on Sundays. But if we love an hour on Sundays and we don't seek Jesus Monday through Friday, we're never going to move our spiritual thermometer. And I can't make you love Jesus. And I can't love Jesus for you. And I can't help you in your temptations. And I can't help you overcome the struggles that you're struggling with if you're not willing to pour into the Spirit of God that's living inside of you. Jesus has told us he's given us everything we need to overcome the flesh. But if all we're doing is pouring into the flesh, we are never going to get closer to the Spirit of God. What you pour into the Spirit of God is what you're going to get out of it. And you can pour nothing into the Spirit of God, and it won't change his perception of you. It's going to change your perception of him. When you pour into your relationship with God, that is how you receive the promises of God. So if you're struggling with something like anxiety, the answer is not just to, oh, today I'm not going to get anxious. Today I'm not going to worry. I know I shouldn't get worried about this, so I'm just not going to do it. No, if you say that, you're going to end up over here every time and say, I hate this. Why am I so consumed with worry? But if you seek God, guess what follows? Does it mean you'll never have anxiety? Does it mean you'll never worry? But I sure wouldn't want to face Ronda Rousey of worry without having a little bit of the Spirit of God inside of me. And you seek God and you watch as he starts to protect your mind and your heart. Maybe finances is your struggle. And you say all the time, and we are so stretched financially and we just hate being in debt and we can't stand what's going on. I know we need to set a budget, but finances is your struggle. And you say, today's the day I'm going to set a budget. Today's the day I'm going to do something different. And then what happens? You find yourself over here and you say, I hate this. I did this. I chose to do this. My decisions led me here. If you want to face the financial monster in your life, you've got to tap into the Spirit of God living inside of you. Because Jesus has given you everything you need to destroy the flesh. Everything. So whatever your temptation is, if it's looking at something you shouldn't look at, if it's having a relationship you shouldn't have, if you constantly put yourself in that situation, you'll fall every time. But if you seek God, the rest will follow. He gives you the strength to overcome. This is so important for us as a church, because I don't want to be a church that just exists. And I don't want to be a church that gets some people excited on Sundays but doesn't actually know Jesus Monday through Saturday. Why do we do what we do? It's not just to encourage you. It's not just to give you a good word. It's not just to help you be self-motivated. We do what we do because we really do believe that when you seek Jesus, the rest will follow. But you have to decide in your heart that you're going to seek Jesus. I really wish that every single one of you could have known me in middle school and high school, because I so often get this impression that people just think that because I'm a preacher and because I preach for a living, that I must have just been born this way, or like I just must have like always had this desire. And if you would have known me in middle school, you would have known that I had no desire to have a relationship with God, none. It wasn't like I was an atheist. It wasn't like I didn't want anything to do with God. I just didn't care. I went to church because there were girls at church and we played basketball after youth group. That's why I went to church. And often they would feed us pizza. That was the other reason I went to church. I never went to church because I wanted God to move in my life, or I wanted God to change, or I wanted to get to know God more. But as a freshman in high school, my youth pastor started telling me to seek God and encouraging me to read the Bible for myself and challenging me to pray. And I started developing this habit of reading the Bible. And it was boring. There were lots of weeks where I would look at it and I would fall asleep and I would say, this is so boring. There's nothing good in here. But then God started opening my eyes and I started seeing some things and I started making some changes and I started stirring up the Spirit of God inside of me. And when you pour into the Spirit of God, guess what you get? More God. When you pour into the flesh, what do you get? More flesh. You pour into the Spirit of God, you get more God. So seek God and the rest will follow. Everything good in my life is because of God. Everything. God gives you everything you need. If you want love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, or self-control, it is right there living in the Spirit of God inside of you. But you've got to seek God and watch it happen. And I can't do that for you. So what's the application for today? This is what you do with this. This is the application. It's simply this. Spend time every morning this week intentionally seeking Jesus. Spend time every morning this week intentionally seeking Jesus. I can't tell you exactly what that looks like. For some of you, it might mean going out in nature. I don't understand that. I hate nature. I think nature's trying to kill us. But maybe that's how you connect with God. If that's you, then you need to carve out time to do that. It's going to involve some discipline. It's going to involve reading the Bible. If you say something like you're just too busy to read the Bible, I just say your priorities are out of whack. Because none of us are too busy to watch Netflix. None of us are too busy to get on Facebook. So why do we say we're too busy to spend time reading the Bible or praying? It's because the flesh inside of us doesn't want what God wants. And so we've got to fight against this flesh and make decisions every day to seek God. And what would happen in your life if you started seeking God first thing in the morning? Would your life be perfect? No, but you would have everything you need to fight the battles that are pulling you down over and over and over again. Will you pray with me? God, thank you so much for this day. Thanks for the fact that you love us no matter what, and that you do have a plan for us. And God, we just ask right now that you would stir something inside of us, that you would move your Spirit to help us to do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine. We ask, God, that you would help us even in moments of weakness, God, to seek you. That this week, God, we would make the discipline and we would take the time to pour into our relationship with you so that we could see what a difference you truly do make. And I ask, God, that you would do something in here, that you would change our hearts so that we could actually literally see our lives changed, so that we could experience your power, and so that we could have some stories to share, that we could say, I used to be this way, but I've moved on. And God, would you just do something in us? Would you help us to stop worrying about the world and all of their problems and start worrying about ourselves? Would you help us to change us? And would you allow us to see the world change because of what you're doing in our hearts? We beg you, we ask you to move. We thank you that your love never fails. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.